Welcome to Stupidity, home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
I tell you what, man, he's a literal titan across the entire media landscape.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
There's two guys, a man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stugatz, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
So Billy and Mikey A have left me to my own devices here on Stupidity, which I both love and hate. And I am very excited for our guest who is coming up, because the one thing I've been consistent about over the 20 years of doing this show with Lebatard is that Masters Week is my favorite week on the sports calendar, and we are just days away from Masters Week beginning, starts on Monday, and we are just about a week away from the opening round at Augusta, and I could not be more excited. So I want to bring a guest on. His name is Hughes Norton. He is a former agent. He is now an author. He has a new book out. It's called Rainmaker, Super Agent Hughes Norton and the Money Grab Explosion of Golf from Tiger to Liv and Beyond. I wanted to have him on because this is Tiger Woods' original agent. This is the guy who saw something in Tiger. He was his original agent. He helped build what we now see with Tiger Woods, the marketing, all of it. And he has some great stories. And again, he has a new book out, Rainmaker, Super Agent Hughes Norton and the Money Grab Explosion of Golf from Tiger to Liv and Beyond. I wanted to have Hughes on because A, he sounds like money. B, he also has a name. He sounds like that's an author's name. It's a writer's name. And I should know because I'm an author. I'm a writer. Stugatzbook.com for my personal record book. But he sounds like money. He sounds like a guy who would write a book. And I love golf, but even more than that, I love a good money grab. So with all that said, the original agent who has fantastic stories about how he was able to get Tiger Woods to sign a deal with him and how Tiger let him go, Hughes Norton is going to join us as we head into Augusta Week to talk to us about Tiger Woods and the explosion we have seen recently here in golf. Super agent and author Hughes Norton is with us. He has a new book out called Rainmaker, available wherever you buy your books. Hughes, I got to tell you something. We were talking right before we started this interview. You look fantastic. Seriously, Mikey A, if you didn't know me, you don't know Hughes, but if you didn't know me and I said, who's older, me or Hughes Norton, who would you go with?
Come on, man. Don't make me say it to you. Don't make me say that to you.
I want you to say
Hughes that. Looks fantastic. Well, clearly you two aren't playing enough golf, because that's the secret.
I just played yesterday, and I'll play again today when we're done. So Rainmaker, Hughes, Rainmaker. I'm very intrigued by this book. I love golf. I love playing golf. I love watching golf. I love your story. Why'd you write the book?
Well, basically, so much time went by, guys, from the time I was fired by IMG, 25 years ago. And for the first 10 years out, I had a severance agreement, which had a non-comp attached to it, including talking about or writing anything about my years at IMG. And I was happy to take the money. Thank you very much. And then so much time went by, I thought, it's kind of old news. And I did a podcast a couple of years ago. You guys will know this person and this show because it's probably the number one golf podcast. It's called No Laying Up.
Yep.
And Chris Solomon's the host. Great guy. And a friend in town here in Cleveland said, you know, you really ought to go on a podcast. And being the dinosaur I am, I said, what's that? I don't know what that is. That's how you young guys consume all your content now, right?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, went on the podcast, talked about my years at IMG and representing all these different star players. And that was the end of it. Didn't think much. About 25 people over the next month or so would see me on the street or at the club and say, I really loved your podcast. And I thought, wow, I guess maybe somebody listened to it. And then out of the blue, an email came from the guy who ended up being my collaborator on the book, George Pepper. And he and I had known each other for years because he was the golf, he was the editor of Golf Magazine. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. you know, the two mags, Golf and Golf Digest.
Yep.
And we had a lot of dealings with each other and we're friends. And I hadn't heard from him in 10 years. And George sends me an email saying, heard your podcast, really cool. Is it finally time for us to write that book, quote unquote? And I thought, you know what? I'm getting up there. Probably my last chance. Let's take a crack at this. So long story short, we got a great literary agent, my first agent. I was on the other side of the table for a change. Mm-hmm. And she made a wonderful deal with Simon & Schuster for us. And we spent the next 20 months pretty much regurgitating all my years at IMG and me trying to remember as much of it as I could. And George is the greatest collaborator I could have had. You'll see when you start the book. It's an easy read. It flows. It's great.
When did you know you wanted to be an agent, Yuz?
Complete serendipity. I was at grad school in Boston, about to go into a business career. And
you could say Harvard, Yuz. It's okay. You don't have to say Boston. You could say Harvard. You could flex a little bit. All right.
Harvard Business School. Okay. And
after going to Yale, I mean,
I don't think I could get into either institution these days. It's tough.
Right.
But and we had a class the second year of the 2-year program called Starting New Ventures. It was about entrepreneurs and their companies and how they got started and the mistakes they made and the success they had and so on and so forth. And lo and behold, Mark McCormick, the guy who founded Sports Management, came to class and commented on our discussion and on his company. And I'm reading this case the night before and I'm saying, holy Mac, you know, sports, you can have a career in sports business. Remember, those were the nascent days. I mean, this is McCormick had started a few years earlier with Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, and Jack Nicklaus, but there weren't any sports agents. You know, if the pendulum has swung totally the other way, which a lot of us probably feel it has, with the agents running the asylum, you know, back then it was just getting started. And I'm reading this and I'm going, oh my God, you can go to work in sports. So I talked to him after class. One thing led to another. He interviewed me the next 3 or 4 months later. And lo and behold, I got a job working first as his assistant, executive assistant in Cleveland, doing not golf, but projects across the whole breadth of our company, International Management Group. And a couple of months after that, one of our main guys working the tour, you know, signing players and representing our clients, left the company. And Mark said, hey, Hughes, you played golf in college. I know you like golf. How'd you like to do that? I was on my way.
Yuz, this is there's so many great, like, with the press release that came out with the book, there are some open-ended questions here. So I'm just going to take them like one by one, because these are details that I would like to know about. Okay. And so I think the audience would be interested as well. And again, his new book Rainmaker is out wherever you buy your books. You were stabbed in the back by a Hall of Famer. Who was it? Tell us the story.
Got to be careful here, Stu. How much?
You don't want to give up too much.
How much good stuff I give away?
All right.
How much good stuff?
Listen, I won't ask you all of them, okay? But I'm just warning you right now. Hoodwinked by Phil Mickelson is something I'm asking you about, okay?
Yeah, that was Mark O'Meara,
right?
Who, interestingly enough, was my client for years at IMG. When he first signed with us, another agent recruited and signed him, but he wasn't with me. And a couple of years later, Mark said, look, if I'm going to stay at IMG, I want to be with the top guy, Hughes Norton. And my plate was already too full, but I took him on because he's a really good guy. And he's a guy that's respected by all the other players on tour. Then Tiger turns pro and he needed somebody. I thought, you know, he's a 20-year-old kid, had never been away from home before, basically. And we had moved him to Florida to save tax. And we put him in the same community where Mark O'Meara lived. So I said, Mark, look, I'm 30 years older than this kid. I said, you can relate to him much better age-wise and also tour-wise. You know, he's finding his way on the tour and you can give him the ins and outs and the do's and don'ts and really help him. I said, you don't have to do this. I said, but you live 3 doors down. I would really appreciate it if you would sort of be his big brother. And Mark was flattered, said, I'd love to. Became really Tiger's best friend. And lo and behold, 2 years later, basically left me as he stayed at IMG, but he left, said, I didn't want an agent that's aggressive and kind of go for the juggler. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's kind of what you pay me for. But I said, okay, you can have somebody else in the company represent you. And unfortunately, those feelings toward me being Tiger's best friend came across to Tiger. And in the end, Tiger ended up firing me too after 2 years. I can't blame it all on Mark. I think a lot of it, guys, was I was really so much older than Tiger and spent a lot of my time relating to his dad, Earl, when he first started.
Sure.
That maybe Tiger wanted somebody more his own age, whatever. But there was a definite betrayal there that you know, sort of stuck in my craw.
If you had to do that over again, would you do it differently?
I wouldn't. I would not. Right. Because it played out so perfectly for Tiger and helped the kid when he needed it.
Sure.
Mark is entitled to his opinion. You know, everybody isn't going to like the guy that they're working with in sports management. You change all the time. You know, your agent, you might find a better broadcasting agent, both you guys, next time around, you know, and it's fine. We understand that those things happen. But it was kind of a rude awakening, given the circumstances.
Tell us about the first time you met Tiger.
I had, as a good sort of agent does, I'd been looking ahead and recruiting and kept keeping track of all the junior golf stuff. And I had heard about this kid. You know, he's 3 years old. He's on the Mike Douglas show, hitting a golf ball on stage. And he makes his first hole in one when he's 6 years old. And he breaks 80 when he's 8. And I thought, you know, given the fact that there's tons of prospects that never make it, you guys know that from all sports, there's can't misses. And guess what? They miss. But I thought, this kid's really worth checking out. So I was on a business trip to L.A. and I literally looked in the phone booth. You know, we didn't have anything else. Sorry, the phone book. We didn't have any other way to find numbers. And I looked up Earl Woods. I'd heard about his dad. Got his number and called and said, listen, I'm going to be in L.A. Can I come down to Cypress, California, where they lived, and just say hi? Sure. So September of 1989, I'm in the car with some other IMG guys. They dropped me off. And as they did so, in front of Earl and Tiger's house, these other agents said, OK, are we going to do miniature golf today with this 12-year-old kid? What's the deal? Are you going to play Legos with him? I mean, we don't normally sign golf clients till they're 2 years in college.
Right.
And tennis wasn't that way. Tennis was chasing 12 and 13 year olds all the time.
Yes. Definitely.
In fact, I note in the book, Carlos Alcaraz, the current number one, I think he slipped to number two now, signed with an agent when he was 13.
Crazy.
That's the tennis world.
Yes.
But for us, it was unheard of. And I just got needled all the way out of the car right until I got to the Woods' front door. Said hi, met Earl and his wife Tita, sat and talked about IMG a little bit. I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is the most advanced recruiting trip I've ever done. This kid will not probably turn pro for at least 8 years, but got to do your homework, right? And Tiger came in kind of toward the end of our discussion. He was 5'5 and about 110 pounds, if you can imagine, and said, hi, nice kid. Took me back in his room, showed me all the unlike, you know, the typical 12 or 13 year old with the pinups maybe on the wall and favorite other sports. He had Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and Greg Norman. And it's a great conversation because it lasted such a short time. But I said, Tiger, you've won all these junior tournaments. You've won over 100 tournaments. Where are the trophies? He said, oh, my mom threw those away. I'm thinking, really? And he said, yeah, I didn't care. And right then, it flashed through my mind, this kid, what 12-year-old would let his mom throw all the trophies
He's
away?
Different, yeah.
He didn't care. Right. He was already on to the next achievement, to the next level. And on his wall, he had a little check mark. The article about Nicklaus from Golf Digest that was on his wall had a timeline of when Jack won the junior U.S. amateur and when he won the U.S. amateur, when he first turned pro. And they were all there with little check marks. Like Tiger was already tracking where he wanted to be. So it was crazy, crazy first encounter.
Did you walk away from that encounter thinking to yourself, this kid's going to change golf forever?
I won't go that far. Earl was already preaching it in those days. You know, he's the right. chosen one, yes. Earl told me in the living room that day. And this kid's going to change the world. And, you know, you filter all that out. You hear different stuff from parents. But there was definitely something different. I mean, the trophy thing stuck with me for a long time. I mean, that's crazy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, mom threw him away. No big deal.
Crazy. For a 12-year-old. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. What was the most difficult part of being Tiger's agent?
Shielding him from the maelstrom, you know, this gale force of celebrity guys that hit when he turned pro. I'm old enough to remember when Elvis Presley came along in the mid to late 1950s, and that was absolutely nuts. But the Tiger tsunami when he turned pro was crazy. Everywhere he went, you know, people lined up for autographs, people wanting his time. The first 6 months after he turned pro, we tracked it in the office. We had 1,532 requests from media for interviews like this, you know, newspapers, magazines, you name it. And so we were quickly in the business of pissing everyone off because we basically said no, which was our job. You know, the kid has to play golf. He has to have time to practice and so on and so forth. But trying to act as a buffer in a way that, you know, it's a really tough line to straddle, because the media is very important to helping him advance in his career and helping us do the job we were hired to do. But at the same time, he'd go out at 6 a.m. to play practice rounds thinking I could beat the crowds. There were dozens and dozens of people waiting for him in the dark.
Crazy.
I mean, this absolutely crazy.
Hughes Norton is with us. His new book, Rainmaker, is available wherever you buy your books. From a financial standpoint, Hughes, can you explain to me, to the audience, what Tiger did for the game of golf?
Wow. He did a couple of things pretty quickly. One of the first he did, prior to Tiger, there really wasn't much physical fitness involved with the sport of golf.
Right.
The tour had a small little trailer on site for anybody that wanted to go in and get stretched. And they had a few weights around and stuff. I mean, within a year after he turned pro, Tiger had put on 25 pounds. I mean, he looked like an NFL cornerback. And the strength to him was a definite factor. And other players started taking note on tour. And amateurs started taking note. And this whole fitness for golf, which was long overdue, I might add, phenomenon started developing. The other thing he did initially, and sadly it's never played out, is he gave hope to a lot of African-American kids or the African-American community that this could be a sport they play. Remember, it was for decades, you guys know, country club, lily white, affluent, top demographic sport. Nothing wrong with that, but it should be broader. And Tiger came along, and to give you some perspective, there were probably two other black golfers. Charlie Sifford was a famous one, but he was all by himself on tour for years. And there was a guy named Jim Dent who didn't achieve much success, but had his PGA Tour card. Now Tiger comes along and wow. And I said, sadly, didn't play out, because this whole media sort of perception of all of a sudden we're going to have all these black kids get a chance to play golf. Major problem. You live in the inner city. You can go down a block and there's a basketball hoop and you can find a few guys to play with. Golf, you've got to go 25, 30 miles out of town. You have to have access. Will the local country club let these kids come on and learn how to play golf? It's unbelievably expensive. Clubs, shoes, golf balls, golf bag. So all of these factors were lined up against what we thought might develop. And the PGA Tour, to its credit, developed something called the First Tee, which was an attempt to, okay, let's find a half an acre in the city where kids can at least swing and hit balls into a net. And they've developed a lot of those First Tee franchises, if you will, around the country. But today, 25 years later, there's one other guy, black player on the PGA Tour, and his name is Harold Varner. And guess what? He just went to live to the Saudi Tour. So Tiger, sort of in semi-retirement because of his injuries today, is the only African-American on the PGA Tour. And that's pathetic.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it makes Tiger's story even more remarkable from this standpoint. He did it before there was a Tiger to open the door for him. So
he did.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. What do you remember? We'll get you out of here in just a second here. The day he fired you, what do you remember about that, Yus?
I had known how he dealt with people that he eliminated from his life, going back to girlfriends, his first swing coach, his sports psychologist, and his lawyer, the guy I had negotiated his representation agreement with. And it was probably stemming from Earl. See you later. Done. And he called me September of 1998. He said, I want to make a change. I said, with the ink hardly dry on his Nike and Titleist contracts, guaranteeing him $60 million before he hit a golf ball as a pro.
That you negotiated, right?
Which I was fortunate enough to be in position to do. Mm-hmm. I said, wait, what? And he said, yeah, we're done. I said, Tiger, hold on. I said, we got to sit down and talk about this. He said, no, it's done. I said, Tiger, I'll be on the next plane to Orlando. Don't come down here. I said, what are you talking about? Grudgingly, he let me fly down there. Sleepless night for me, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Fly down. He says, meet me at the front door of Isleworth, which is the community that we had put him in down the street from O'Mara 2 years before. I said, okay. I'm thinking he doesn't want to do it at his condo. We'll go in and find a room inside the club. And he just walked up. Eyes were zombie-like, like he'd never known me before. That's it. I told you we're finished. You shouldn't have come down here. It's a waste of time. I said, Tiger, let's go sit down and talk about this. Nope, it's over. Turned on his heel, walked away. Cold. And has never said a word to me, or I have not heard from him in 26 years we're going on now.
Have you crossed paths bizarre. At all? Like, have you seen him?
Bizarre. Yeah, I mean,
bizarre.
Unique, I think.
Well, what do you imagine happened there? Like, what do you think happened? Do you have a theory? Have you looked into it?
I think there are a number of factors. We talk about this in the book. First, the O'Mara influence did not certainly help. Mark had just gone away from me, gotten another agent in IMG, and had explained it to Tiger, I'm sure, as, you know, he's just too cutthroat. He's too, I wanted somebody more professional. So Tiger maybe thinking to himself, which he had no right to do. He should be thinking, wait a minute, I don't care if this guy's cutthroat. He just set me up and my family and with generational wealth.
Right.
But he's too young maybe to think that way. I think the other thing, guys, is that he, for the first time being away from his parents all the way across the country, they're in California, he's in Florida, he was just starting to make his own decisions for the first time. And I think he felt, I'm not going to talk to mom and dad about this. This is something I feel I want to do, you know. And so still inexplicable. And as was the case when I got fired a couple of months later by Mark McCormick, the guy I'd worked with for 30 years.
Right.
No explanation there either. We talk about both in the book. So it was a real tough time for me. And one of the reasons I wrote the book really is it was very cathartic as I got some of this stuff out.
To get it
especially
out of
with
right.
the, yeah. Especially with the negative endings with Mark and Tiger. Sure. But it's good stuff.
It is. It seems it's fascinating stuff. Rainmaker, look at him holding it up right there with a big smile on his face, selling his book. Rainmaker, it's out wherever.
Shameless promotion, right?
You're not shameless. I just wrote a book. No one's going to be more shameless about it than I am. So don't worry about it. But Hughes, I am wondering if you were still Tiger's agent and Live Tour came around, they offered whatever they offered Tiger, you would have advised him to do what?
I would advise him to stay put. Stu, there's no question. Right. You know, okay. When you're established, right. And Rory McIlroy the same way. First of all, you've solved the money issue. In Tiger's case, if he's worth hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions already, I don't care if they put a B in front of the offer, which they supposedly were willing to do.
Right.
It's meaningless. And Tiger and guys like him in that age bracket and younger, Rory's I would include in that, they have legacy. They believe in winning the championships that have been won by all the greats over the years. And this Saudi thing is a total jump into left field with none of that, no legacy, no history, kind of a goofy format, hasn't caught on, not many fans. You know, what does Tiger need that for? Money is certainly not one of his concerns.
Right. Check out the book, Rainmaker. Hughes Norton is the author of the book. Hughes, I left some stuff on the table, okay? I don't know if you noticed it, but that's how we sell your book, okay? I didn't ask you about, you know, being hoodwinked by Phil Mickelson. I didn't ask you about being stiffed by John Daly. I want those stories desperately, but I will read the book, okay? I will read the book.
Thanks, guys. I want to see your book, too, when it comes out. We'll flip roles here.
Okay, Stugatz's personal record book. Yes, have me on your podcast, please, or some platform, okay? I appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoyed it, guys.
Good luck with the book, man. Sounds great. Sounds fascinating.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Hughes.